Molly Morris's documentary film Exposure is about an expedition to the North Pole. In 2018, 11 women pulled wieldy sledges through shifting sea ice more than 60 miles from a makeshift Russian sea base to the top of the world. Now, part of the idea was to make a statement about climate change and to actually document the accelerating snow and ice melt at the pole. But the trip was also a cultural experiment. There were women from Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, working with women from places like France and Sweden and the United Kingdom. And the difference in their worldview is illustrated in a scene early in the film. This is in the training phase, where they're working to get in shape by doing excursions in blizzard conditions at one point and in the intense heat of a desert at another. Here's the director, Holly Morris.
And this scene is in the desert, in the Omani desert, and it is one of the training sessions for the expedition team, and a really important one. You know, half the women are from the Arab world, so it was really important to have one of the major trainings there. And of course, what it turned out to do for the film story in general, and I think also for the team, is really provide a place where they could be talking. When you're on a polar Arctic expedition or even training in Iceland, it's 20, 30, 40 below zero. You are just trying to get through the moment. You are up against the elements, all kinds of things happening. But in the Omani desert, we and the team were really able to work through the interpersonal issues that might be happening or talk about the cultural challenges. And that scene you refer to, they're talking about, you know, some of the women on the team coming from families who had multiple moms, multiple wives in the family.
You know, I had an experience talking to a woman from Indonesia. It was quite common in her country for her husbands to take a second wife eventually.
For the Westerners in the group, it's a complex thing.
If I was given that option as an educated woman, do you want to be the second wife? No, I'd find that quite hard, I think.
You know, so you see Natasha, who's really trying very hard as a European to understand this. And then you have the Muslims on the team really trying to explain that it's a cultural tradition. It's not like an idea from outer space, and that there are positives to it from their side.
Muslims, correct me if I'm wrong. My dad is married to two women as well. Okay, so I come from a family where there's two moms. There has to be equality between the wives,
yeah.
Financially, with every aspect
That's
possible.
Right.
So
yeah.
The size of the house, the number of cars, the
you know, I just think it really illustrates how the team listened to each other.
And I'm just giving you this example for you guys to realize that there are such cases where women aren't forced into accepting a second wife,
yeah,
or forced into accepting another woman.
And there are going to be differences, and there were going to be conflicts.
So is the opposite also possible, that the wife chooses? Why are we laughing?
No, but
go on. Yeah.
What if a woman would be the one choosing a husband, and then in cooperation with this husband choose the second one and the third one and the fourth one? That, to me, would feel like equality.
But the fact that they had one another's back and that they always, you know, practiced compassionate listening, as it were, as much as possible, they got through the moments and really cohered as a team, which is really ultimately the reason I believe they succeeded. This is not your father's expedition film, right? We went places that you typically don't see in the genre. And for good reason. You know, those were the characters in the film. These were not, you know, Arctic jocks. These were regular people doing something extraordinary together.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Holly Morris's film Exposure is the latest in our film series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening it tonight at the downtown Salt Lake City Library. We'll give you more details about that in a moment. Morris and two other women came along to document this expedition, but they were never considered part of the team. Morris says they were separate entities, though she admitted she had applied to go.
This idea of women together out in the natural world And the idea that a special alchemy can come out of that and transformative things that you may not see coming. This is the waters I swim in, and that's something I really believe in. So I think politics and adventure and chasing one's own potential are all things that are fruitful in the natural world. So I love kind of throwing myself into situations I don't know how I'm going to get out of, because I think great things come out of that for me. So, of course, this was extreme. Making a film with a trip of women from diverse backgrounds trying to reach the North Pole, that was even, my last film took place in Chernobyl, Doug, as you know. So it's like I'm interested in extreme environments and unlikely heroines and the stories that can come out of that and how those stories can, inspire and sort of instill agency in next generation of women. Yeah, but I also personally just love a good challenge. So I my dirty little secret is I applied to be on the expedition and I got rejected by Felicity, the expedition leader. I'm not even sure if she remembers that I applied or if I was just in the pile of rejects. But, like any good documentarian, I kicked my foot in the door and circled around, tried to find another way in. Over the course of a couple years, developed a relationship with Felicity and the team and really earned their trust. And, there were lots of issues, as you can imagine. We were separate teams, my film team and Felicity's team, but there's a lot of liability out there. And Felicity had to really be sure that we were not going to become a liability for her and her team. But I think we got there.
One of the things you talked about is that one of the questions that interests you is when a woman says, this question, what are the dreams you don't even let yourself have? That is, women who defy these kind of expectations. Will you talk to me a little bit about your own interest in this? Like, where does that come from? Did you think about that as a woman who wanted to do difficult things, but also as a filmmaker who wanted to explore, where does that come from you?
Oh gosh, Doug, you're asking the hard questions. I guess I should have a good answer for that, because it has been my MO for a long time. But I guess it's my brand of global feminism, right? Was to really, I spent a lot of time different places in the world and try to do my part to create possibility. And, it's been mostly through storytelling. And, it started early on that, I didn't see in books and films, I didn't see myself. I grew up fishing and I grew up doing all these things, and I'm like, let's infuse feminism into this media, right? And it's been a few decades now I've been doing that, and that maybe doesn't seem so revolutionary now, but in 1990, kind of like doing a series like Adventure Divas, where you're exploring culture through the lens of women change makers in that culture, and that wasn't getting done a whole lot. And I feel like that kind of politics and event and I feel like adventure, can and should be really political, and it is. And you can revolutionize your life through that. And it all starts with the individual, right? If you can see your own potential and chase that, then you're in a position to change the world around you.
Tell us about Felicity Aston. On one hand, she seems really unassuming. She doesn't seem terribly aggressive necessarily or anything like that. I mean, there's this one moment in the film where they come upon this crack in the ice and she says something like, "Oh dear," and it's kind of but she's incredible. Tell us about her, first of all.
Yeah, Felicity Aston is remarkable.
Every good expedition runs off a chocolate. And then we have the toilet tissue, very important. And there's a lesson that I learned the hard way that I can now pass on to the rest of the team. You have to be very careful when you're using these tissues, which are really useful to use as toilet paper, but you have to make sure they're not the menthol kind. That's bad news.
She was the only one on the team who is a veteran polar explorer. She was the first woman to cross Antarctica solo many years ago. She wrote a book called Alone about that experience. And, you know, this whole expedition was her brainchild, right? You know, she really believed in that, in a way. I know this might sound naive, but that anybody could do this, right? I mean, not anybody, but physically anyone. If you see her, she's sort of unassuming, and a lot of people in the team are physically unassuming, but it's really all about the alchemy of the team and training, right? Learning the skills and having one another's back. And at one point in the film, she says something like, expeditions fail because everybody's like, oh, it was the worst weather in 50 years. You know, it was this reason or that reason.
But when you sort of dig below the surface, it's because someone within that team wasn't made to feel of value, or the team wasn't communicating properly. And so that's why I feel that so much work has to be put into that, because that doesn't happen by accident.
That's really why it is. It's really much more interpersonal than the record books would show.
Yeah. She says in the film that something like, look, I could do this myself, but she said, but if I did, that would just kind of, as she has, like, right? Like she skis across Antarctica solo, but she said, if I did it myself, it would be a hollow victory. That's how she puts it, unless there was something deeper. So she's looking for something deeper in that expedition. She's looking for, as you said, that team dynamic, but also a kind of connection between women.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why Felicity and I connected in terms of teaming up for this, you know, we had to collaborate a whole lot, as you can imagine. She wanted to do something bigger, right? You know, she's a veteran polar explorer. She knew she could do it. She felt she could do it. She had never done it at the time, though, gone to the North Pole. As she put it, a hollow victory, meaning, you know, she wanted to do something for other people, right? And she wanted to help create a story and an experience that would go beyond one individual's ambition. And I think she did just that. I mean, she's a terrific leader. And there was all manner of complications, some of which you see in the film and some of which you don't, that she had to lead her team through. And they believed in her, and they had to in order to succeed.
Did she trust you at first?
Me? So she, I had to earn her trust, not in a, you know, in a, that I was an untrustworthy person, but more that the idea of filming something like this, right? A film team adjacent with her team is a hazard. There's a lot to be concerned about. So I think a couple things. I think she had to come to believe that I would tell the story in an honorable, accurate way and in a non-exploitive way. And also that I would put together a team that physically could do this. And not become a liability out there on the sea ice. I think I spent a lot of time talking to her. We just showed up at their first training in Iceland when they were meeting each other for the first time, and showed up with our cameras and met them and started building trust over the course of a couple of years. And that all paid off in the end because, you know, when the rubber hit the road, you know, it was a really difficult situation. And so the fact that we'd all trained together film wise and otherwise made all the difference. So, and I think, and I'm happy to say, I think she and everyone on the team was pleased with the film and that it did sort of capture their story on many levels, which was the right way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like she didn't want you to, as you said, be a liability or get in the way. You had to pull your own, I guess.
We had literally and figuratively. So my team and I, we had to, all of our camera equipment, all of our batteries, everything we needed to get through the expedition was loaded on sledges and pulled behind us, just like Felicity's expedition team. So, and I had amazing cinematographers in Ingeborg Jacobsen and Catherine Barrows. Catherine's American, Ingeborg is Norwegian. And they had to, you know, just like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, you know, they had to basically ski backwards and do this. And they were the real stars of the show in so many ways. And you know, it never could have happened without their grit and talent and commitment to the story. So, you know, they weren't just trying to catch the drama of and danger. They were, along with me, you know, really interested in the internal stories and the growth of the women who were on the expedition team.
I think it's interesting that I've seen behind the scenes footage of the film where we see the crew, Catherine and Ingeborg and you, but you're not in the film. There's no shots at all of the behind the scenes kind of thing in the film. And I think that's interesting. We don't get your presence as part of it. Was that important to you as a choice?
That, yes, not putting the crew. Well, you know, it was important to me, Doug. We did have an early cut of the film because we did have some pretty, you know, interesting footage from the crew and some, you know, hijinks that went on behind the scene that is interesting in general. But, you know, we put it in the film in a first cut, and then I was like, you know, this is not our story. This is not the crew story. This is not my story. And so we just stayed true to the original vision, which was to focus on the team in the expedition. And you know, we'll do a behind-the-scenes film. But it was important to me to really stay focused on the story at hand, and you know, if that meant we missed a few hair-raising moments, that's okay.
Yeah. Felicity says in the film that the project is about adventure on one hand, but it's also about this kind of cultural experiment. Why was it important to her that these be ordinary women? As you say, no experience is necessary in the call out. Why was that important to her, do you think?
Yeah, to me, that was the most extraordinary part of the story. I mean, the cultural diversity was interesting, religious diversity, and, you know, fact that it was women. But the fact that it was ordinary people, right? You know, people who hadn't even, you know, weren't even athletes, much less polar explorers. You know, that was important because she believed, Felicity believed they could do it, right? You know, this idea that you know, an ordinary person could train and get focused and bond with the team and make it to the North Pole is to me the most radical idea in all of this and something that we wouldn't all necessarily think to be true. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to be a spoiler here to your listeners, but she was right. And it did. I mean, of course, there was luck and hard work and all kinds of stuff that went into it. But it was, in a way, the most extraordinary theme in the film.
That's the filmmaker Holly Morris. She directed the documentary Exposure. You can join us for a screening tonight at the Downtown Salt Lake City Library. We have details about that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. So there are a lot of really interesting characters in the film, of course. I wanted to ask you about one of the really strong characters that emerges, a woman from Oman, Anissa Al-Raisi. Did you know right away as you're starting to film that she was going to play a large part in the final product?
Well, you know, Anissa is clearly a strong person, a strong character, fierce in a lot of ways, right? Yeah, you know, so as we first met her, it became clear to me as a filmmaker that she was a character to watch, right? And to see what happens with her. And of course, early on in the film, in fact, I think the first day we met her, basically she said, the fact that it's an all women's group sort of terrifies me. And I don't really get along with women.
I've had maybe
two female friends my entire life, and I'm not very good with women. Women, I feel, have a lot more drama connected to them, and I am not very emotionally involved with people.
You know, technically, we don't necessarily have to get to the waterfall.
This will be the most difficult part for me, especially in a stressful situation.
Of course, my ears pricked up. I thought, oh, well, this is going to be interesting. How is this going to turn out, you know, 2 years later, right, trying to get to the North Pole? So you see over the course of the film that her story arc is one of the most profound, I believe. She grew and changed in so many ways. And at the end of the film, you see her dropping to her knees and praying for the first time in 7 years, you know, becoming very vulnerable. Whereas physically, she was the most adept and strongest person out there, stronger than Felicity even. But sort of in terms of her, where she was in her life and her insecurity with being with a group of women, all those things played out over the course of the film. And you see another character in the film, Mizba, who is the oldest member of the team at 50. And she, you know, was, you know, she is probably physically the least strong of the group. And everybody kind of dismissed her in a way for being too mumsy and, you know, was always cooking and all of that. But you see the tables turn. Mizba ultimately is the strongest force, I believe, on the team. Mm-hmm. You know, she ends up holding the team together and sort of developing relationships that change and grow. And she has the most profound spiritual, she holds the strongest spiritual and religious beliefs on the team, yeah. I believe. Mm. And so all those things hold her in good stead and her character grows. And by the end, you know, she starts out being under respected, you know, person on the team. And by the end, she is the de facto leader. And it's just kind of interesting. You know, if anybody's gone out, push their limits physically and otherwise out there in the natural world, you know that everything is laid bare and everything is raw and that you come out of it the other side a different person. And so I think Anissa and Mizba really stood out as two of the characters who had profound growth out there.
Say a little more about when we first meet Mizba. She talks about having been, before she was married, really sheltered.
I had never been to a cinema until I got married. So, and I've never eaten out until I got married. Oh dear, this is hard work. All right, there we are. We inspire our children as they're growing up to do things differently from what we had done. But when our children are grown up, we then don't do anything for ourselves.
Gosh, I wish I'd learned skiing when I was young. I wish I did a lot of things when I was young, but everything comes in its own time.
What do you want to say about Mizba's husband and her sons? I think those scenes early on seem to say a lot about her relationship with the men in her life. I think it's just, what do you want to say about that, those scenes? Because I think they're really telling.
I would say, you know, her husband and son are really terrific and they supported her going. But you see at the opening of the film, they're teasing her, right? They're kind of like, come on, mom, you have a terrible sense of direction. You know, remember when you went the wrong way down the highway? And they're kind of quite jocular and teasing her and used to her being the one who's kind of in charge of hearth and home, right? Mm-hmm. And so this idea that she's going to go to the North Pole is something they they support but are kind of bewildered by, right? So you see her from the start of the film kind of having to work to get her place at the table, literally. And that's a little bit of a, you know, a metaphor. I think everybody on the team had to overcome something to get even out there, right? Right. Getting there, getting whether it was, you know, permission from someone or another, whether it was, you know, challenging cultural mores, whether it was, you know, physically getting in shape. There were, everybody had huge hurdles. And, you know, that was hers.
As you said before, Felicity says in the film, when expeditions break down, it's not the weather, it's not really the conditions necessarily, it's because someone in the team didn't feel valued. You know, it's about the personal dynamics of the team. What were you noticing about the way the relationships were beginning to evolve? As someone says, I think it's maybe Felicity, everyone is passionate. So you start to see the kind of possibility anyway, the makings of, you know, possibly tension and conflict. What were you seeing there?
Yeah, in the trainings we saw, we were chatting about Mizpa and the fact that she said, oh, I was put on the inside team. You know, so when they're training, there's sort of the inside team and the outside team, right? The inside team will go in and start the hot water and start the food and, you know, get the sleeping bags out. And the outside team is shoveling the snow and, you know, securing the tent and all these things. And Mizpa says, yeah, I wasn't given the opportunity to be the outside team because they said I'm too mumsy. You know, so you see that kind of early on in the film and you realize that she is kind of getting pushed into a role even out there. And but by the end, you know, the tables have turned in many ways and Mizpa has proved her competency in many, many ways and earned the respect of her teammates. And I think that, you know, especially the practice sessions in Iceland where things got difficult, they had to really rely on each other and everybody had a role to play and everybody had to respect one another's roles and do their jobs. And that getting that well-oiled machine working, Felicity knew, was the key to their success, right? If they didn't respect someone or someone didn't do their job right, or they didn't have one another's back. These are the things that ultimately lead to a breakdown of an expedition, as much as weather or, you know, tragedy and all those things. These are the ingredients of success.
Will you say something about just the kind of extraordinary logistics at play in orchestrating an expedition like this? The way they set up the ice station. We see a bit of that in the film, you know, the helicopters and the planes having to sort of get things in order at this ice station. What goes into something like that? What did you see that seems remarkable? Mm.
Yeah. So the process of building Barnio, the Russian ice station, is remarkable. And that it is the base essentially for all scientists, expeditioners, that needs to be there. That's at about, for this group, it was about 89 degrees north. And so it's crazy, right? You know, what happens is helicopters go out over the Arctic sea ice, Russian Mi-8s, I believe, helicopters, and they find a big chunk of ice, right? That still exists. They're getting scarcer, but... Yeah. It's big enough to build a runway on. So they parachute guys and goods and two snowplows out of the side of planes. And then the guys jump onto the plows and build a runway. And if they can do all that, then they can fly in expeditioners and scientists like us, right? Mm. You know, to get them that, you know, within striking distance of the North Pole. I mean, the thing is, it's extraordinarily dangerous, this whole process. And it only exists, this temporary ICE station, for 3 weeks a year. Yeah. And it's been happening for some 30 years, I believe. I will tell you, though, Doug, that since we are the last, Felicity and her team are the last expedition to be able to pull this off, right, to reach the North Pole. And that Borneo ICE station has not been built since we were there. And that has to do with degrading Arctic sea ice, and it has to do with geopolitical conflict, because it was an all Russian operation, right? And so with the war in Ukraine, just not possible politically, because it requires alliance between European nations and Russia for this to happen. They need to be taking off from Norwegian territory and whatnot. So for a lot of reasons, the sad truth is it looks like this team will be the last ever to reach the North Pole. And as far as I know, I don't know if they're going to try to build Borneo this year. It's now March.
Yeah.
Right about now is when the decision has to be made. I suspect, given the ongoing war, that even if the sea ice were to hold up, I suspect that politically they wouldn't be able to pull it off.
Holly Morris, she directed the film Exposure, going to be screening it tonight at the Downtown Salt Lake City Library. You can come join us. We'll get started at 7. We'll take another break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. There's a scene I wanted to ask you about. It's the first day of the expedition when the helicopter drops off the team to begin. It does. It drops them off, and then it leaves.
Yeah.
And there's silence.
Guys, hold on to your skis. They could fly away when the helicopter goes.
Will you just talk about this moment in the film?
Yeah. So after 2 years of training and, you know, all manner of challenge already, the team finally, you know, the expedition is underway and the team finally gets dropped off onto this lonely chunk of ice, right? And they are on their own from there on out to make it to the North Pole. And the moment when the helicopter recedes into the distance, and for the first time we are like left with utter silence. I'll just say it was pretty terrifying. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody in the team was like, oh, this is the moment where you're like, what did we get ourselves into? You know what? They were prepared for the moment. They've been training for 2 years. They just launched into action in terms of getting their sledges ready to pull and in terms of cracking on. Mm-hmm. At this point, they'd been up for something like 2 days, right? You know, and there's no darkness there that time of year, right? Yeah. 24 hours of light. So there's and it's 40 below zero.
Yep.
So all these things come to a head. And it was, I think I speak for everybody there saying it was probably the most terrifying moment. But as you see in the film, Felicity leaned into the moment. Okay, let's do it. We were built for this, right? And they all cracked on and did a full day of skiing after that until something like 9 p.m. But that was the sort of danger and the fact that it was 40 below, which is sort of a frightening feeling, did make it sort of a singular moment in the whole film, but in the experience as well.
Well, Anissa is asthmatic when they get there, and if, as you said, it's 40 below. she's cold. She's struggling to breathe a little bit. It seems I felt panicky for her, and she has to kind of settle into the reality of the moment. It was another one of these things where, like, okay, you guys are on your own. You've got to figure this out. That was another moment that seemed kind of terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, that asthma attack was, and again, it was interesting. It was Anissa, right, who physically was the strongest person out there, and then she was blindsided by this asthma attack, and there was a question in that moment, like, should she go on? And Felicity, of course, every step of the way had to be making sure the team, you know, not to put them in danger. They didn't need to be in, right? So there was a moment where it was questionable whether she would go on. And Felicity gave her the green light ultimately and carried on, which is, of course, the right thing to do. But, you know, there were many steps along the way where Felicity's leadership was critical, really, to keeping everybody safe and moving in the right direction.
You know, you were saying before that, unlike when you're in better weather, warmer weather, or even hot weather, you can talk to each other. But when the wind is howling, or you're covered in, you know, a hood and goggles and a mask, sometimes you're just – you get the sense, of course, throughout the film that they're on their own in some way, even though they're together. And there's this great story where this one of the members of the expedition, Asma, is talking about this conversation that she has with Anissa, where they were both experiencing it was really hard, and they were both crying sort of at the – they didn't know it, but they were both crying at the same time during this particularly difficult moment in the expedition.
Yeah, I do think that there's – in an expedition like that in extreme environments, the idea of being alone together is a very profound one. Huh. And Anissa and Asma have this discussion, like they get to the end of their session, right? You know, so they're moving and skiing along for, you know, maybe three, you know, multiple hours at a time without talking to each other. You can't, you know, talk, you're totally covered up and you can't speak to one another, and you're having your own head trip, you know, along the way, keeping yourself together. And in the case that you refer to, you know, both of them had a really tough session, had a tough 4 hours, and they were crying inside their goggles, but they didn't know it, right? Mm-hmm. And but that they talk about it, and you know, everything got talked about in the tents, you know, at night, and that's really, I think, where they started to come together. And you mentioned these two characters. So Anissa, at one point in the film, says, "Oh, I was basically worried about sharing a tent with Asma, because basically she's a princess, you know, and I'm not the kind of woman who like bonds with princesses." But in the end, their relationship became incredibly strong, and became very close. And yeah, so again, just another way that when you're sort of physically challenged in extreme conditions, like amazing things can happen. Mm. You know, you're in the trenches, so there's bonding, but also just in terms of shattering your stereotypes about people, right? When you think someone's kind of a princess, and what does it mean to have that person out, have your life in their hands in extreme circumstances? Well, you know what? Everybody showed up and proved each other, proved themselves.
Yeah. I don't want to give this away, but I'll just sort of refer at what happens. But there's one of the members of the expedition has a real physical challenge that she has to deal with, and jeopardizes whether or not she's going to be able to stay. I won't say much more about that. But this is Miriam, who's from Saudi Arabia, and she is in the same tent with, it seemed to me like a woman who couldn't be more different from her, Natasha, this Slovenian journalist. And that moment is so, for Natasha to see Miriam struggling like that reveals this, one of the most emotional parts of the of the film itself. This connection that they had knitted together, they could, as I said, they couldn't have seemed less alike, yet they seemed to have connected in such an intimate way. Would you say something about this?
Yeah, you know, Natasha and Mariam were also two of the people at the center of the conversation about multiple wives that we referred to early. And you could see early on in the film and early on in their relationship, they were night and day, right? Natasha is a sort of tough, seeming woman who was baffled by this idea of multiple wives. I mean, that was my perception of their conversation. And Mariam is a very soulful person who talked about coming from a family with her grandmother had multiple wives in the family.
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward to them being out on the Arctic sea ice and Mariam being injured, and they have, you know, gone through hell together to get where they were in that at that expedition. And you see Natasha completely, they've really just completely bonded at this point. And all the barriers and differences between them have melted away in the face of this, of the challenges they've faced. And when Natasha sees Mariam, you know, suffering physically, and, you know, it's questionable whether she can carry on, you know, Natasha loses it. You know, she's like, you didn't deserve this. You know, this is the space between succeeding and quote unquote failing here is so narrow, so small. And when everything's high stakes at 40 below zero. So, you know, it's a very emotional scene and everybody's crying and I don't want to reveal what happens next, but yeah, I mean, that really, showed in the context of an expedition and an expedition film what can happen. And it's, to me, that was a, like, I don't know, just a really seminal moment. It was a difficult moment, but in the film, in terms of the storytelling and what can happen when women come together to think, to chase the impossible, it really says a lot.
Well, Felicity says that success isn't just about, you know, getting to the top of the world. You know, it isn't about planting your flag. She says it's more than just a physical thing. She says it's exploring what's inside us, that it's just as important to explore the part inside as the outside world. What do you think she was getting at there? Did you come to understand that in a deeper way making this film?
I did. I think when she said, it's as the internal journey as much as the external journey is, and in stark relief in an extreme environment like the North Pole. And you do see throughout the film that play out, right, with every character. Yes, it was amazing that they made it to the North Pole and all kinds of things had to happen. Yes, it was amazing that they made it to the North Pole, but the journey each of them took personally was the real story, I think, you know, and really what makes it remarkable and what makes them go on to do so much more since then. I mean, Mizpah, I believe, climbed K2. Asma, the princess from Qatar, is pursuing the Explorer's Grand Slam, which is the most ambitious adventure slate one could have. And she's really become a role model in her country for women. And Felicity, you know, I mean, everybody's gone on. I just think internal growth is really, you know, the best of adventures. That's what it's about. You come out the other side a different person, a more empowered person, a more humbled person, someone who can look at your teammate and see a different picture than you started out on day one. And those are all things that I think Felicity was keenly aware that possibility was at the heart of this expedition. And that's why she went through all that she did to make it happen. And each and every individual, I think, was driven by the same thing.
Asena says that people can be so much deeper than you think they are. 'Cause when we first meet Asena, she's a little reticent, a little maybe skeptical about these kinds of relationships. But then she says, you know, people can be so much deeper than you think you are. And I wondered, what did you learn? I mean, you weren't part of the expedition. You were shooting the expedition, but you were there. What did you learn about human nature in those conditions?
You know, something I learned and a great takeaway for me was, I mean, I've done a lot of expedition filming and I've been in extreme places and I've watched women in particular, you know, I've watched people do so much more than they thought they were capable of. Yeah. And those are the stories that I'm drawn to. But I will tell you, I was incredibly inspired by the women and what they did. I mean, I think everybody thought, and all the outsiders, including me, I have to admit, really thought that they could never make it, right? And I, and not so much that I didn't think they had it in them, but you know, the sea ice was terrible. There were, you know, delays. We just had all these things going against us, and they were regular people, not hardened polar explorers like that you know, we hear about are the only ones that can pull off something like this. So when they did, when each of them went so much further than anybody expected them to, and when even when they were injured and when they were angry and all these things, that they came together and they have so many differences among them, right? But they had one another's back. They did come together as a team and they didn't give up. And I think that I was just, you know, I was inspired all over again by this expedition and what women are capable of when they set their mind to it.
Anissa says she compares the experience to what she imagines is something like postpartum depression. You know, you have that extreme experience, but then when it's all over, there's this kind of letdown. Did you feel that? Did others in the expedition feel that? I mean, even as a filmmaker, seeing this sort of triumph and then, you know, the adrenaline sort of drains away. I mean, did you get that sense?
Yeah, I do think when you're operating at really high levels and high levels of stress, high levels of physical demands and fear, honestly, when you're in fight and flight mode for you know, weeks on end, there's always a letdown. And I do think that, I think Anissa mentioned in the film, you know, like, do you ever fear like what happens next? You know, yeah. Basically that you crash after something like this. And yeah, that happened. You know, I think for everybody that happened when we made it back to Svalbard, of course, but by and large, I think the feeling was relief and victory and companionship. And it was so hard that there wasn't, you know, even if you crash a little bit, you're like still glad it's over with, right? It was hard.
Holly Morris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Holly Morris, she's the director of the documentary Exposure, which we're going to be screening tonight at the Downtown Salt Lake City Library. You can get more details at radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you if you have ideas or comments or feedback. Email us at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.